this is what they call a midlife crisis. Oh, I'm in the middle of a midlife crisis.
I feel for that person because that was me for so long, and the word passion triggered me. Maybe the biggest clue is to go back and be like, what was it?
All right. How does one start a podcast, Julia? We'll talk about that later, but
yeah.
Welcome to Shiny for the Moment. I don't know when it will air in order, but this is the second time we're recording. So on today's episode, I am joined by two beautiful, amazing women, Evan Riscus-Barsonis, whose voice you will have heard before, aka Effie Zilch, aka best friend, my lifelong friend of almost three decades, mother of two not so tiny humans. Newly minted Shiny for the Moment recurring co-host.
Ooh.
And no big deal, a songwriter, musician, performer in not one but two bands touring around the US, maybe the world, who introduced me to our other wonderful guest, Julia Riley Martin, host of the Dream Your Life Now podcast, mother of three, inspirer of many, myself included, in the form of podcasting, coaching workshops, and now a coach of coaches with your business to grow your own coaching business that you run. We'll hear more about. But most importantly, and why you're here today, and why both of you are here today, is because you made giant, scary leaps in your career, in your life, as part of what we will be calling a midlife awakening. Mm. So, welcome, welcome. Yay. We will hear from you shortly. I'm so excited to have you on. Because we're new to this, I will assure you that it will be bumpy, but everything we talk about, including how to find these wonderful women and how to learn more about them and anything we talk about will be linked and shared. But midlife awakening, what is this? One day I was having those big feelings of overwhelm where I had motherhood, I had career, I wanted more. I needed a new version of happiness that had more purpose. And I kind of paused and had this big realization that, oh, this is what they call a midlife crisis. Oh shit, I'm in the middle of a midlife crisis. I brought it to this group of amazing women through a networking group called Chief, and we had a guide and smaller groups. And our guide was a coach, a life coach. And she said, no. I call that a midlife awakening, and this rebrand was everything to me in the last 2-3 years and ultimately what led me to my big life choices. But it's this feeling that a lot of us share maybe approaching or in our 40s where we need to unlearn everything we've learned our whole life about what was important and find some version of ourselves that is in more alignment with who we really are. And blossoming in new ways, awakening instead of just maybe you have to break down like a caterpillar in a cocoon before you turn into your butterfly, cheesy references. But with that understanding, and I kind of sprung that phrase on you guys too, I'm curious to know, did you know you were in a midlife crisis / awakening? Or is this looking back, are you going, oh yeah, that's what it was? Julia, did you have any sense when you were in it?
100%. I don't call it the midlife because for me, midlife is like 50s, 60s. But okay, I definitely call it an awakening. And like when I was in it, I knew something was happening. Like I knew that I wanted to change my life. Everything that had been pulling me and all these kind of like ideas that were swirling around and this like feeling of misalignment, it all just came to a head. And it was like, boom. I had to make a decision to do something. Otherwise, it was just going to be too painful and uncomfortable to stay where I was.
It's crazy how strong and different it feels from other urges. And I was saying to Evan earlier, I have ADHD. I will end up talking a lot about that. I want to change things all the time. But this, you're describing, came to a head is so different from that.
Yeah.
Rearranging your room vibe.
It's this like, because I think you can deal with like the little pull, the tug, this like, I don't actually really like what I do. I'm not like totally fulfilled, but there's a point where it just, it builds and builds and builds and builds and builds where like for me, it was like, I just can't keep living this life, even though everything, I've manifested all the things around me. It's all like great. And it's the vision board come to life, but it wasn't my soul aligned vision. It was like
a vision board changed.
Well, it changed, but it was also like, I was looking at the things and I'm like, is this what I really wanted? Or is this what like growing up in Northern California and like the Bay Area, what they told you success was, you know?
I think that's the real interesting thing. Like there is this conveyor belt that society, and I think that's actually changing now, which I'm really proud of. But I do think there's this conveyor belt of like, these are the things that you do, right? You go to college if you have the opportunity and you get married and you have children and you buy a house. And then you do all those things, maybe because you're supposed to. And maybe you find great, and I found great joy in doing all of those things. Until I did it. But then there isn't necessarily this prescription, this conveyor belt of what's after. Like mm-hmm. that is not something that's talked about all the time, right? Once you have all those things, I never heard lore of what it was like to be a 42-year-old woman with, you know, independent children at home and owning a house for a long time and part of a community for a long time. I didn't hear those conversations. I heard all the pre-conversations. But what's the after conversations? Mm-hmm. And I think that is when in those moments, you're like, whoa, there is no design. The design is in me and I can live up to, you know, what other people want from me, but I could go a really long time with not knowing what I want for myself. And I think that when those, like, what do I want for myself? What's my legacy? What do I want my children to remember about me? Like, I think that's for me when those questions started coming up to me, like, who am I? Like, without these stages.
1,000%.
Yeah. I also talk about this a lot with my coaching clients, and I've talked about this on the podcast, but it becomes really, it's easy when you have those kind of goalposts, when it's like, okay, graduate from high school, boom, you're working towards it. Graduate from college, get a job, you know, get promoted, meet someone, have kids. And it's like, everything is going, you're like checking off the things. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, what? I don't have the next goal. I don't even know what's next. What am I doing? Like, where am I going?
Yeah. Spoon fed certain paths that, well, and especially depending on where you went to school and all that, there were even clearer paths that were still defined, or the startup pull that we all experienced by being in NorCal. We all ended up at tech companies.
Yeah.
And that feeling of feeling lost maybe precedes this awakening of like, there isn't the obvious next step. I think that's so well put, Evan and Julia. I wrote a couple of things down while you guys were talking that I'm wondering. I wrote selflessness and purpose, which you guys both said in one way or another. When you're being so selfless as a mother, you can lose your figuring out what you like. To me, in this first iteration of this awakening, looked like, I need more hobbies, you know, like, oh, I should figure out what I enjoy doing when I'm not at work and when I'm not a mom. And that is okay. And that is a path for a lot of people. I think we are all in a position of privilege, which we appreciate, where we could be like, maybe my hobby could be my purpose. And I think a lot of people can do that, some easier than others. And I'm curious how this maybe evolved from self-reflection. I'm looking in, what do I like? What do I need to, oh, this actually translates to a career shift instead of just a self-exploration exercise.
I was reading something you wrote, Julia, like a couple days ago. You were kind of reintroducing yourself, it felt, you know, to the community, and you were like, here's what I'm about. And one of the things that you wrote was like really honoring little Julia. It really stuck out for me, and I thought about it deeply, and I've heard the phrase, you know, but I was thinking about what that meant for you, which was whenever I would hear stories about you as a young girl, like Julia always had like a really deep curiosity, about the world around her. And then had parents that were so encouraging of those. Like whenever she was going to do something, she believed that she could. All those stories, Julia, of like you working at like creating companies when you were like four, right?
So you and have been I manifesting thought, your whole life.
Yes.
That's amazing.
So I do, like, I think it's really important because little Evan would lie on my back listening to music and being like, oh my, like, it makes me cry. Like, oh my God, what is this? How can my soul feel like this? Wait a minute. I think I can do that. You know, those little things about ourselves, those kernels about ourselves, we're so conditioned to like, let go of that. But when you're in this search for your hobby, like maybe the biggest clue is to go back and be like, what was it? The unadulterated me, the me that was in awe and wonder of things without a lot of muck, like
overthinking.
Maybe those are the things I really love. Maybe I should know more about that.
I love that.
Yeah, I do too. I'm like, whenever Evan, oh, I have like goosebumps, but it's so true. It's the reconnecting with that inner child, but who is, it's like pure soul. What did I love doing before people told me that I shouldn't be doing that, or that doesn't make sense, or that's not going to translate into a career? Like, what were the things that lit me up when I was little? And not that those are going to be, I think for you, Evan, it's like, it's so clear, but I think they can also become these little breadcrumbs where it's like, oh, I actually really loved making movies, but I also really liked connecting with my grandmother's friends. And then also this, and it doesn't really make sense, but then you start moving and it's like all these little dots start to connect and they can paint a picture of, oh, I could be doing something that allows me to do a little bit of all these things, or at least tap into those feelings that I had.
Yeah,
you're right. It's not, I was always envious of people who had a clearer sense of that one thing that drove them. Music for you, you know, music for our dear friend Eric, who was already recording when we were in high school in his house. But I think you've nailed something, Julia, which is, as a part of this awakening, it is piecing those dots together. And well, to your point, Evan, looking back to your inner child, and you either have this beautiful glowing neon sign that's telling it to you, like you had, that was so moving, or you're piecing together these dots, which can feel discouraging, can be keep you from answering the call to do more or to make a change, because it, what if I run in the wrong direction? What if I, you know, fail? Or what if this thing is too silly and stupid for me to actually pursue? How many times did you kind of have this call before you actually answered it?
Well, I mean, I was living a block away from you, Erica, and I remember like the day, I mean, I was trying to chase my dreams right after college and got hit with the
reality of the music industry.
And being a woman in the music industry at that time, maybe still. Mm-hmm. But I remember putting my guitar in its case and closing the things and putting it under my bed and calling you and being like, hey, what's that company, Roxa? And like,
being like, you know, I'm like, going to now go to the corporate world. This is
yeah. And that entirely served its purpose in my life. Like entirely yes. served its purpose mm-hmm. in my life. And
that might have been the path you were meant to go on, but.
Right. I had to go on that path, right? I didn't have a strong enough inner voice until now.
Or right? It was strong and you weren't strong enough to.
Or experiences to draw from to help
right.
what you're creating too. I mean, I always talk about this because I think it's so important, because I think a lot of people, when they're trying to find their purpose, and it's like, well, I hate what I do, or I don't like where I am. And great. Like, allow that to, one, help you crystallize what you actually do want. If you know what you don't want, that's going to provide the contrast. And then the other piece that I think is so important is that, especially if you're doing something for a while that doesn't feel right or that doesn't feel aligned or fulfilling, when you can kind of figure out what it is that you do like and you start moving towards it, the contrast of doing something that makes you feel alive, that makes you feel so excited about life and work and whatever you're doing, you can't experience that without knowing what the other side feels like. So you need both, right? It's this whole duality thing. Like, so I feel like that's something that we always or I try to remind myself of and people, it's like, it's all part of it. Like you have to have the sick days. You have to have the days where you feel like crap. You have to have, you know, the bad boyfriends and all this stuff to make you appreciate the things that are amazing and incredible, because you wouldn't feel so grateful for them if you didn't know what the other side felt like.
Yeah. I mean, it's that age old thing, right? You can't love without knowing loss. Like those contrasts are what illuminate the path, right?
Exactly.
And what we're looking for is those nuggets to cling to when we're kind of floating or disintegrating into our cocoon in our butterfly larva stage. And so then, okay, you packed up your guitar and you put it away in a very symbolic moment.
Yeah. Just so dramatic.
What a scene. I can see it now.
I read this quote today. It's Steinbeck. And it said, it's a hard thing to leave any deeply routine life, even if you hate it.
Mm.
That's a really powerful, really provocative statement, right? Because that's all safety and comfort and routine is.
It's the conveyor belt you mentioned.
It is the conveyor belt. And I really do believe that one should acknowledge like how brave it is. Yeah. To walk yourself to the edge of that precipice and go. And you can take as many steps as you need, but there will be that one point, like you, Erica, like right now, where you just go. And then to go back to what you were saying earlier, Julie, like in that, you're like, oh my God, I'm alive.
I'm also trying to think of the person who's listening, who's like, I don't know what my passion is. I don't know what I want to do. Yes. I do know that this isn't it. And I feel for that person because that was me for so long. And the word passion triggered me. I would see entrepreneurs like building career. I couldn't even look because I was like, oh my God, I want to do something, but I don't know what I want to do. And that is like, they're doing it. They're doing it. But I'm like, I tried a belly button ring business. I had like all these ideas. I like created these back, like I thought I would like sell backpacks for kids, airplanes. I was like, I need to do something. I don't know what it is. And what that moment was for me is I had my third child, Wit, and I'd been feeling that tug that we're talking about for so long. Like, this is not, the world isn't seeing the best of you. Like, this isn't what you're meant to be doing. Like, what is it? And I had Wit and I got a call from Twitter. Again, he was like 3 weeks old. I was on maternity leave. I'd been working at Twitter for 8.5 years. And they called and they said that my role was being made redundant and that basically I was getting let go. And I wasn't even going to get my full maternity leave. It was just like, I'm like, what? Like, I have been so loyal to this company and I've like foregoed so many different opportunities and I haven't jumped and done anything for myself. And it was like this mixture of feeling so like upset, but also like, that's it. I'm done. And then, so I decided, I'm like, I'm going to manifest a job back at Twitter because I want my full maternity leave and I want some security, but I'm doing something and I'm not going to start like a drop shipping business on the side. I'm going to like do something that's like really aligned.
Oh gosh, I have a failed drop shipping business on the side too. Do we all?
Awesome.
We'll save some time for the graveyard of our failed businesses. Yeah. We'll have to do that too. Okay, go.
But to answer your question, that happened and I did get the job back at Twitter and I was like, I don't know what I want to do, but what I do know is that when I connect with people and talk to people and just kind of keep moving, I know that that is going to at least give me some inspiration and ideas. And so I'm like, I love podcasts. I listen to podcasts. Maybe if I start a podcast and talk to a bunch of people who are like living their purpose and passion, I'll get the inspiration. And then that will be kind of like, you know, I'll have a creative outlet, a project, like a body of work I can share with my kids, and I'll figure out what I want to do. The podcast was going to start. It was going to be like interviewing people about their purpose and path. And then I had
like this one example podcast we're doing now. You were going to do a lot of these.
And I wanted to learn about different industries and stuff. And then I was like not feeling it. Cause I'm like, I don't know. And I sat with my husband, Alex. We're looking, and I have like 5,000 of these spirituality manifestation books. And I'm like, I just want to manifest. He's like, well, why don't you just talk about that? Manifesting and spirituality and creating a life, all the things, you know, that have worked for you. That is what started it. And it 100% was that taking that first step to like, I don't know where this podcast is going to lead. I don't have a monetization plan. This isn't going to be my business, I don't think. I just want to do something. And we call that in the manifestation world, taking inspired action. I was inspired and I took action. And then you start to see the momentum build. We could talk about the spiritual side, we can talk about other, but I do think it's that one step, that conviction, that decision. I'm actually going to be committed to figuring this thing out and to doing something.
I love that. I admittedly have not read or listened to nearly enough of all of your inspiring stuff because I get easily distracted and other things. And for me, the thing I cling to is I call it stepping into the garage, because there was an example of, I really wanted to be able to park our new golf cart. What a wonderful thing we have to park our golf cart in our garage. And the thought of the undone project of living here for 2 years and never having cleaned out the garage and made space for all the things we could do in there and organize it was so overwhelming and exhausting to think about and brought up so much shame and doubt. But I took the first step because I knew this was important. I opened the garage door and I stepped into it. And when I stepped into it, by taking that leap into like, I'm actually going to go look at the garage and see what I need to do, I realized we had had this bulky item pickup and my husband and I had purged a bunch of stuff and it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And so what's my entry point into anything that feels scary or I don't want to have a full action plan and breakdown or whatever. I don't have to have it all planned out because I get paralyzed by that. I step into the garage.
Yeah.
Take that inspired step. So I love that you have there's a whole process built around that and the meaning of it. But yes, yeah. Evan, what was your inspired step back into the music world?
Gosh, it actually took a friend.
It often does.
Yeah. To remind me that I had something to say, like musically. And he was pretty relentless about it. He had moved back from LA. He's my current music partner now, and he'd come over and have dinner with Camilo and the kids and I, and he's like, okay, pull out your guitar. And I hadn't played and I sucked and my voice was like warbly and like I didn't have my range. Certainly didn't think I had my songs. And he's like, okay, great, great. You know, let's sing the songs that you used to sing. So we would do that. And then he's like, okay, in 1 month I have, or whatever it was, I have the studio, I have Different Fur booked in San Francisco, which is a good studio. And I'm like, okay. He's like, so bring your songs. I'm like, Steve, I don't have any songs. He's like, Evan, bring your songs. I'm like, I don't have any songs. He's like,
oh, they're
you
there.
Have 1 month. And then we showed up and I did have songs. I just wasn't. And we got to Different Fur and we did them. I listened to them and they're so cute. They're darling. They're not good. They're darling.
I didn't know the story of it. I love this. Oh my gosh. Keep going.
And I remember coming home and Bryce was like 4 or 5 at the time. And I put the headphones on of what I'd done during the day. And I have this picture of her going like this, you know,
on Instagram.
Yeah, it's totally on Instagram.
You're like, she approved.
I think with me really internally, that image of me putting music away is that I always knew that there's not an ability for me to be like dabbling in music. It's so all consuming for me. It's either like I'm in or I'm not, sort of like how I work out. I'm either like on this amazing fitness regime or I'm like,
or I'm a slug.
It's so much better when we're in.
All the hyper-focus, yeah.
but I think so that awakening was the nudge and the encouragement and then that slow build of letting me step in back into myself in that way and then trusting myself to believe in it. And
you've probably been having to tell yourself that it wasn't worth believing
in.
Yeah,
like this not
quiet it for
yeah,
a while,
like it's not
unintentionally.
Yeah, you basically say that's not who I am anymore. That's not what I do. Even though I would love to say that I had enough faith in myself to, but it was really like a friend encouraging me, and then me being like, oh yeah, and then me being like, oh no, diving here back I go. In full. Here we go. Floodgates have opened. I just also really wanted to say for the listener too, that a lot of times these things can be like, life is dandy and rosy when you're fully living your alignment. For me, I still struggle all the time with what I'm doing. Right. I still mentally struggle all the time because what it requires of me physically to do what I do. But what I always come back to when I get to those places of like, oh, should I be doing that? Like self-doubt is always there. Self-doubt is always there. But learning how to hone those voices in a really constructive way, right? Like, oh, this is a normal struggle. Today I'm tired. Today, my premenopausal 41-year-old woman, like, hormone level is not fully capable of being 100% joyous about my decisions. I'm scared still. I'm really scared, right? All of those things can still exist as they would in life. Those are part of it's part of the journey. But when you are living in alignment, for me, it's so much easier to go right back into the positive self-talk. Like I can get there so much more quickly than I could with any other thing, mm-hmm. right? And so what I'm trying to say is that it's not easy. Nothing is easy if you're really going for it, right? It's hard. It's hard work. It takes grit, determination. It takes resiliency.
Sacrifice.
But all of those qualities, sacrifice. But all of those qualities come, I think, a little bit more easily. When it's for doing what you love.
Really great perspective. And now I'm going to be very attentive to see if that is true going forward, because for me, which I assume it will be, and I hope so. I love that. And I like the reminder, because I think you've both touched on this. We assume that after we take this big, scary leap, then now, oh, it's going to feel so great that we found that beautiful alignment and we're finally doing it. Yeah, I'm going to want to stay up every night and work on my podcast. I'm not going to want to do any of the bad habits that I'd picked up before and all these things. When that magical moment doesn't kick in of now everything's better, it's really easy to say, oh, maybe this isn't what I thought it was, or maybe this wasn't as important, or this wasn't the right big step for me because I thought I was going to wake up feeling totally different. So I think that's a very important reminder. This side note, unless anyone has anything else to say on that specific thing that I wanted to ask you, Julia, was Evan had a friend, and not everyone does. And is that essentially what you do in your coaching business and help people do, is be that friend who can bring you into the studio the way Stephen did for you, Ev?
You know, I think, I'll answer that in a couple different ways, but I think the decision has to be yours. And I think Evan was ready and Steve came in at the perfect time. I think if it had been even a few months earlier, it might have been a very different thing. So I think it's like, it's less about the friend and it's more about the timing of it all and you being ready.
Yeah, it's the universe.
I think it's the universe. What I have come to know, and I firmly believe this, because I think one of the questions I get asked a lot is, like, my husband's really struggling or my friend's really struggling. How do I manifest for them? Or how do I help them get out of it? Or what can I say? Or how do I encourage them? Or what advice can I give them? Because I'm feeling really good about what I'm doing and I just want to help them. I want to pull them to this side. And the short answer is you can't. There's nothing you can say or do. You certainly can't manifest for someone else. What you can do is inspire through your own energy and you feeling so confident and so good about your conviction with how life works and finding your passion that they can't help but feel it themselves, but they have to be ready for it. I mentioned this in my podcast, but I went to go see Abraham Hicks live, which is, they're a spiritual teacher. Very long rabbit hole. Go look at Abraham Hicks because it's incredible, their teachings. But a lot of it is around, like, you can only influence through your energy. You can't influence through your words. You can't, like, there's no advice you can tell someone to get them somewhere. But if someone happens to be ready and in that place of, like, I want to make a move, and then they see you, like, in Evan's I'm sure Steve was like, I love this. I feel it. I believe in it. And Evan's like absorbing that, right? And she's also ready on her own. So I think that's like the long way of answering what you were asking. Like, no, I'm not the friend that's like, here, you come over here because this is how you do it and blah, blah, blah. And you are ready. And I'm going to, no, you're going to be ready. And then my words are going to hit you exactly when you need it, if it's right for you, kind of thing. Makes sense.
No, it totally makes does.
Sense. Totally
a,
makes
a
sense.
1,000%. And it made me think of, I think, I know both of you have had some form of sales roles. Mine was never called sales, but we all sell in various things in our work. And what you're describing is the only way I could ever articulate why I didn't want to be in sales slash what worked when I ended up actually selling something or an idea or anything in my leadership roles was like, if I don't believe it and my energy isn't selling it, then like, it doesn't matter what I say. Give me all the pitch decks in the world. Like, my energy is going to be what gets it or doesn't. So spend your time convincing, like letting me figure out how I connect to it. And then I will do that for someone else. And it's exactly what you're describing. I just thought that was an interesting parallel.
That I wanted to mention on the last thing we were talking about is that when you know that your world is seeing the best of you and you're doing like something that lights you up, you also become a lot more sensitive because like, when we were in corporate, I didn't care. Like, I'd be selling something at Google and someone would say something like, oh, this is fraud or blah, blah, blah. I'd be like, I don't care. This is not my thing. But if someone says something that's like connected to what I do now, which is my purpose and my passion, and, you know, skepticism or even like any kind of insult or, I mean, that hurts, right? Because it's like, this is what I want to do. And I'm sure, Evan, like, did you care at all at Google if someone would say something about what you're selling? It's like, no, but what about your music? Your music?
I mean, it's so true, Julia. I think too, because there, again, back to the bravery and the courage, right? Like when you're putting forth into the world something that's deeply personal because you love it, and you are, and it's your life energy that's causing it to exist, it becomes entirely vulnerable. And that's the part that's probably the hardest, right? Glorious is the other side of that, right? When it's going well, it's like, oh my gosh, this is the best. Yeah. But the shadow side is that you're so sensitive to it, you know, it's coming from your guts and from your heart. And so people's acceptance, approval, all of that matters in a different way.
Yeah.
So but how do you build up that resilience, or do you?
I think it's like anything else. It just gets easier and easier and easier. The first few months of doing anything like living your purpose or doing a new career or something that, you know, starting a bit like, it's so hard in the beginning because it's all new and any comment, anything is going to be like, ah. And then the more that happens, the more and more and more and more. I just think it's like anything else. You do build up resilience. It doesn't like mean that like a comment or something like doesn't hurt, but it doesn't feel the same as the first time, you know? Like,
and so you don't try to anticipate and shame yourself first so that no one else can, because that's what I do. And
no.
Like, So I'm sitting on 15 new songs, right, that I have to release. Now, I have to think that every song that I do is the best song I've ever done, because otherwise I won't give it my full energy. And then only till after I can be like, oh, that's in the C category. But, you know, in this process, I'm like, what does success look like? It looks different to me than the first time I released songs. Like the first batch, I'm like, I want the world to hear me. You know, I want everyone to love my music. It doesn't look like that to me this time, right? It looks like, am I saying what I want to say? And is it sounding how I want it to sound? And am I proud of it? And are the people I love most, will they love it? You know? And it just is a different paradigm. Like, cause you learn about your purpose. It reveals itself more and more to you along the path, right?
Totally.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's a lot of reframes that I use. I'm a big affirmation girly, but like not in
I did your Monday morning one this morning with your cuties in the bed.
Well, because I think that affirmations also just in general, like they can be psychologically damaging. If you just say like, I am rich, I am successful, and you're not yet, it does something to your brain and it's not good, right? Because you don't believe it. But like, I love affirmations that support where I want to go. So for me, like I trust that everything is working out for my highest and greatest good. And I'll repeat yes. that over and over. I think there's a lot of opportunities to reframe when something happens or like, if I'm feeling really uncomfortable, I have reframed it in my mind at this point to know that that means I'm growing. So when I'm feeling it, I'm like, well, it actually feels kind of like an exciting, uncomfortable. I haven't been here before. Ooh.
I like that. Okay.
I'm going somewhere new. I'm learning something. I'm evolving. I'm experiencing something new. Yay. Welcome, uncomfortable feeling. I'm getting to a new level.
Okay. So now that is something that isn't scary. That discomfort is familiar in a, oh, I know that means something new is coming away.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And okay. if you can turn that uncomfortability and just kind of reframe it in your mind as a little bit more of the exciting, that's exactly what's going to happen. It's like everything we anticipate ends up showing up in our life. So if we anticipate that things are all going to crap and it's like, that, you know, and that's kind of like basic manifestation. But like, I'm always trying to be like, what does this mean? How can I reframe this in a way that feels like it's in alignment with where I want to go with like the next level me?
Sorry, you're giving me a good segue because I was trying to see how this kind of wraps up. How we tie this all together? Obviously, it's enough to hear amazing people talk about their experiences in the scary stuff and then pursuing and actually taking the leaps that you both have taken. And it continues to be inspiring for me and makes me want to keep going. But why is this so fascinating to me right now, to us, obviously to you, to build a business around this? I mean, you've been fascinated by it your whole life, but is it just our age? Is it some function of the way society's evolving, being a woman? Is this unique to just women? There's something about this that I'm curious if we just dig into it for a few seconds of why is this so relevant now? Why is it something that comes up in every conversation? I mean, post-COVID, there were at least three friends who told me they quit their jobs. I mean, within a very small circle, expand that to the world. We've seen the trends. People are finding their own ways, more creative ways to make money than just 9-to-5 jobs. And it's so I'm curious of your thoughts of why we're here now and why this is such a hot topic for everyone.
What I have come to see, at first I was like, oh, it's kind of interesting. It's like, is it COVID that kind of gave us this time to reflect and go inward and start thinking about what's next? I think it was a lot more than that. And my own perspective is a very spiritual one, but I do think we're kind of entering this time where there is a collective awakening happening. And I think it's very much intentioned. And if you can actually look back on a lot of people who have made predictions about what's happening, and this is the year, like there is going to be a major shift and there's going to be an awakening that comes through. And we're going to start remembering where we came from and who we are. And that is going to cause like chaos and wars and all this stuff, but it's also going to allow everyone to go inward and start reconnecting with their soul's purpose. And so I've interviewed a lot of people on my podcast who talk about this like collective awakening that's happening right now. And it's happening around the world. And there's a spiritual reason for that, which we don't need to get into. But I do think like we're all experiencing this for a reason.
I love that answer. I did not know I was going to get that.
When we interpret the world around us and what we actually have to face, for me at least, it sort of provokes like action and clarity, because if we're not aligned with ourselves, if we're not putting out the best version of ourselves, right now. It's right now. Like we have run out of time as a species, I think, to be complacent about a lot of things. And when you accept that, in that acceptance, you also have to start that it actually has to be within you that is that agent of positive change, right? It's in you. It's in us to raise our children. Yes. But it's also like in us to live how we live our lives, right? Spiritual health.
To take it almost more literal. I love the spiritual talk, not shutting that down at all. I was having dinner timely with a bunch of old colleagues last night. And I was saying how, looking back, I think I needed / enjoyed the drama that happened at the startup. We had a lot of highs and lows and drama with bosses and hiring and products and not getting things done. And we would complain about it at the time, but I think that kept it interesting for me, albeit stressful. And there was a moment when it was during COVID, whether that was my trigger or just an example that got me there, where I didn't want the drama anymore. There was enough drama in the real world and in my life as a new mother and home with three kids that I didn't need to manufacture it anywhere else. And so it feels like another version of what you both are saying, which is that, you know, whichever comes first, the chaos or the awakening, or maybe they happen simultaneously in this world right now, micro and macro, my world and the world. I don't have room, have any place for more places drama? Where I can't have control.
Yeah.
Drama. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you. Because
I think also, Erica, what you're saying, and this might sound spiritual, but I don't, it isn't. Like there is this also return and like rebalancing of feminine, masculine energy, masculine being like the way you do things is strategy and plan and to-do lists and like corporate. Right. And the feminine energy is much more about what, you know, purpose and connection and things you can't see, leading with feeling and intuition and things like that. And I think there's like a shift that's happening. I'm realizing like the hustle and the like, you know, just the plan and the pushing and the I need to get, that's not working anymore. So let's move into this place that feels a lot better. And there's a balance. Like you need both for sure. Like,
yes.
You can't start a podcast without doing the things, right. But you also have to believe, you have to like lead with what feels right. And it is all about connection and things like that.
I love this. And I think it could be its own episode because I'm equally obsessed with the findings, the daily findings that are coming out about the gut itself and like listening mm-hmm. to your body and the gut mm-hmm. versus the brain and how that ties into intuition and how we make decisions and how we do or don't listen to our body. I'm so fascinated by that. And I love that it's coming to the forefront, to your point, the energies are changing. And obviously we're women. That doesn't mean we naturally align with the feminine energy. I think we happen to in this group here, but gosh, this is so much more comfortable and how I like to operate anyway. So finding those lanes that allow for that. And now there's more lanes open, but mm-hmm. finding those lanes that allow for that to be the guiding force is just, that's living in alignment.
Well,
that feels like being more.
I'm so excited because I feel like I just got a lightning bolt, but like right now, if you're actually thinking about like the three of us and what we're doing, right? Like, we're sharing. We are sharing what we know, what we've experienced. To take you, Julia, right? Like you not only are like, hey, here's how I did it. Let me coach you so you could be a competitor of mine. Like you're sharing your skill set to enlighten others because there's plenty of room. And
yes.
the opposite of that is to take and to own. That's that masculine energy. I will overpower. I will carve out my own. This is my own. It's mine. And that system inherently, we're out of resources. There's nothing more to own. Like it's the age of sharing. And like, what does that mean? Right? What does that mean? Like I write songs. They're free, guys. Like they're like no one pays for music, right? My songs are for free, for you to enjoy, right? But like all of us are doing something to share, to give of ourselves, hopefully make a living, will, not hopefully, making a living with the intention of making a living to do that. But the principle, the base root principle is to share. That's an interesting
thought.
And yeah, that is a perfect, I know you're out of time, Julia, so I want to be respectful of your next thing. If you had more thoughts, because I was going to say this idea of sharing is perfect so that we can go share this in the world.
Yeah, well, because I think it goes back to also like, we have the spiritual perspective, we have like, but there's a lot of people talking right now about this. And that means there's also a lot of people on the other end consuming it. And when you believe something is possible and you are expanded by conversations like this, you can't help but, again, absorb it and feel it and maybe start thinking about it for yourself.
And that's what got me over the hump to do this was I realized what I thought was this negative energy where I wanted attention or celebrity in some way or an audience in some way. What I actually wanted was the ability to inspire. And that wasn't just an excuse. Even if just one person learned about something and thinks about it more and talks about it with someone else and it helps them or anyone in any way, oh, that's what I wanted. That's purpose. That's the hump. You helped me get there by your conversation. So I love both of you. Thank you so much. And we will, of course, I've got so many notes and amazing things to share from everything you guys talked about, including one of your songs, Plenty of Room in the Sky, Evan, that I'll have to get right somehow to share. I don't know how I'll ask about that.
Who are you going to ask?
You guys are amazing. Thank you. And thank you for listening, hopefully enjoying and bearing with our less than stellar audio. Maybe if you listen and share this, we'll justify getting some production help. In the meantime, enjoy music by, of course, Effie Zilch. This one's called Gospel of Gold, and you can listen to it anywhere you find your music. Have an awesome day.